The Viridian Nutrition range of 200-plus award-winning products includes vitamins, minerals, herbs, nutritional oils, specialty supplements, tinctures, and balms, all formulated to be healthful, efficacious, and pure. By choosing our Viridian Nutrition range, you are one step closer to your goal of 100% wellness. Ethical vitamins with an organic heart. Available at all Browns outlets. Browns and you.
So I'm just going to share, I'm extremely excited that Danae is with us. Danae Mercer-Ritchie, if you don't know, is an incredibly empowering woman through social media who talks openly about body image and what we as women are being fed. Now, I have a confession, Danae. I did not know of you a year ago. And when I said to Maxine over there, I said, we want to do an event. I said, who would you like to have at that event? And like within a split second, Maxine said, I want Danae. And I said, I'm going to make it my mission to get Danae. And I started following you. And you have changed my thinking, you've changed my path, and you've changed my life. And I am absolutely thrilled that you are with us today. Danae is going to come to us with a keynote speak. I'm then going to ask Danae some questions. And then just as Danae is speaking, which is why I'm mentioning this, think about questions that you want to ask her, because we're going to have an open Q&A. And I'm absolutely thrilled, delighted that everybody is taking part. And I want to encourage us to continue to do that. So, Danae Mercer-Ritchie, over to you.
Thank you. Hi, everybody. I just want to start with a quick warning. If I do have a coughing fit, I'm really sorry. I always thought I had a really good immune system. It turns out I was just good at avoiding people that cough in my mouth, like my 16-month-old baby does. So I also want to say it's a real joy to be here today. It's really interesting. They've done some great studies about how women communicate when men are present. We have this idea that women talk more than men, right? The stereotype, oh, women are chatty, men are quiet. Research doesn't really back that up. It actually shows that when men are present, we talk less. And when we do talk, we spend most of that time accepting another person's ideas and letting them know they are heard. So I think there's something really powerful when you get groups of women like this together and create a safe space where we can communicate and open up and feel seen. When I was given the chance to talk today, I kind of asked myself, okay, well, what do I want to talk about? Do I want to share my life story? Do I want to talk about eating disorders? With my life story, I was like, well, where do I go? Do I tell the story of my mom, who got pregnant with her first child at 15, had four children by 23, was sick from the time she was 33, and even though she was my best friend, she died at 39 when I was 19. Do I tell that story? Do I tell the story of my eating disorder? How, like many girls, I started dieting when I was 13. But it was normal. You know, we all do it, right? You skip this, you skip that, you cut out sugar, you don't have carbs. We just, like, do it to fit in. After my mom's death, my first boyfriend, my first love, broke up with me on the day she died. And yeah, that was a tough time. And within a year, my stepdad kicked my siblings out of the house, and my life started falling apart. Very quickly, I leaned into food as a way to control everything that was happening. And that's the way with eating disorders. You know, it's very rarely about our body image, although that plays into it, and it has a whole lot more to do about what we're feeling inside. So do I tell that story? Do I talk about how my hair started falling out and I thought, I'm not sick enough to get help, I'm fine, I can manage this myself? How my body started to hurt, how my brain was so foggy and dark and sleepy, and still I thought, I'm fine. Other people have it worse, I'm fine. Until my university stepped in and saved my life. Do I tell that story? Or do I tell the story about working in magazines, flying from London to Dubai, being the editor-in-chief of Women's Health Middle East and Men's Health Middle East, and then COVID hitting and going viral? of exploding from 70,000 followers to 1 million followers, 2 million followers, and how incredible that was, but also terrifying. And for an introvert, a very kind of delicate, artistic introvert, how challenging that was too. Do we tell that story? I thought, no, we would need days, months to go through all of that. So I thought, okay, I'll talk about disordered eating. Research shows that so many women struggle with disordered eating. It's something that I reckon probably everyone in this room, I reckon everyone in this room could relate to. Do I talk about the stats? How every 52 minutes, there's a death tied to an eating disorder. Every 52 minutes, how eating disorders are the deadliest mental illness in the world. How girls as young as 6 now think they need to lose weight. They think they're fat. How by 14, 70% of little girls are already dieting. How this year in 2024, the diet industry blew up to $90 billion. $90 billion. Do I tell that story? And I thought, no, that story will just leave us filled with rage. Rage that is very just, but just rage. And that's not the message I want to send today. So I thought, okay, I'm going to talk to you about something that's been on my heart the last few weeks. And that's two words. Not yet. Not yet. So a couple of weeks ago, I had a call with a brand that wanted to work with me. When you become an influencer, this is a very normal thing. Brands reach out, you communicate. They weren't right for me, I wasn't right for them. But one of the really interesting things they said, they're a huge brand, and they have teams of researchers and pharmaceuticals and all this stuff. One of their big research projects is looking at the power of not yet. About how powerful it is when people who fail, who struggle, who are in a dark time, how powerful it is when they cling to those two words, not yet. And the difference between people who think, okay, I haven't achieved my time on this race. Not yet. But I will. I will one day, but not yet. Versus the people who think, I haven't achieved this time on my race. I'm a failure. I'm a shameful person, I'm disgusting, I should give up. These two quite drastic differences. And they found that people who hold to the idea of not yet perform drastically better, but also when it comes to their bodies, to their mental health, have a better body image, a better mental health. And it's something. So I went away from that call, the call that didn't proceed, I think, in the way they anticipated. I went away from that call and I did my own research. And it's something that research, again, has backed up. So I'm a bit of a nerd. I was fortunate enough to go to Cambridge after doing my undergrad. I really like books. I like research. There's a study of thousands of Americans going across 18 years, and they looked at this exact thing. They looked at the power of not yet, the power of perseverance, the power of thinking, even when you struggle, even when you fail, even when you don't quite achieve that goal, but you still think maybe, 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 the difference it makes. And this research has shown that people who hold that maybe, maybe, they suffer less from anxiety, from depression, even from panic disorders. And I mean, it's a story that we're often told in the media, right? Like, look at J.K. Rowling, who I think her book, her first book, for Harry Potter was rejected 13 times before it was accepted. Stephen King, I grew up with Stephen King, huge Stephen King fan. His first book, Carrie, was rejected over 30 times until he threw it in the trash and his wife fished it out. Power of women, right? His wife fished it out and was like, no, amore. I don't know why she's suddenly Italian, but my husband is. She's like, no, keep trying. And he did, and now he's one of the most prolific and famous kind of science fiction authors in the world. What does this have to do with body image? What does this have to do with mental health? What does this have to do with what we see when we look in the mirror? Not yet. Back when I was struggling with my eating disorder, I got very ill very quickly. And not all eating disorders manifest themselves in that way. Maybe some of you have gone through that. Maybe some of you experience it in a much more delicate way, whether it's restricting, whether it's picking apart your body, whether it's, you know, there's a thousand different ways that we struggle with this wonderful wrapping that we're in. When I was sickest with my eating disorder and my university stepped in, they did it in three ways. They gave me a therapist, a nutritionist, and a nurse and a doctor. And I would see these three people multiple times every week for about a year. And I remember my therapist, kind of further on in our sessions, she asked me one day, she's like, well, what is your, if you could eat any food in the world, any food. And at that time, that was inconceivable to me that I would eat any food, because there were good foods, there were bad foods, there were safe foods, there were foods that I was not allowed. She's like, any food, what would it be? And right away, I was like, oh, I know, Reese's. I don't know if you guys have Reese's and Malta. Okay. They're like these wonderful things of peanut butter and chocolate, and just, they're just magic. They're just so good. I was like, Reese's, that's what I'd have. I'd have Reese's. But as soon as I said that word, I remember we were sat on the couch and she was opposite me. And as soon as I said it, in my head, I was thinking, but that's not going to happen. In no world can I eat Reese's. In no world is that possible for me. And she's very gentle and very smart, and she's like, okay, well, just hold that idea there, but you don't have to action it today. You're not a failure because you're not out there eating Reese's. But just hold that idea, and maybe one day in the future. What she didn't tell me then, but one of the things I've learned, is how us women, especially, we are so capable of growth, of evolving, of becoming stronger, even when life throws the most insane challenges at us. It is the history of humankind. It is how we are here today. We evolve, we grow, we survive. And I think of it a bit like climbing a mountain. You know, I love to go hiking in Thailand, and there's this one mountain we climb at 5 a.m. in the mornings. And I took my baby last time, and she was strapped on my body, you know, little legs wiggling. And if I looked to the top of that mountain at 5 a.m., I would think, there is no way. This is not happening, no way. So instead, I'd look at my feet, and I would focus on the feet of the person in front of me. And you take one step, you take another, and you take another. And an hour down the line, you are at the top of that mountain, and you're watching the sunset, or the sunrise in this case. And that's what we do. We are so strong. But sometimes we let the impossible goal stop us before we even start. It's about taking that one step. You know, 10,000 steps a day, you run 70 marathons in a year. It's just one step, one step. And that brings me back to this idea of not yet. Because I'm asked all the time, oh, Danae, you show your cellulite on the internet. How do you love yourself so much? Oh, Danae, you show your stretch marks. How are you so confident? I'm like, well, there are days when I look in the mirror and I'm like, yes, you know, fire. Yes, I'm rocking it. Yes, this feels sparkly. And there are days when I look in the mirror and I have to look away, because that's part of being a woman, and we are constantly bombarded with, you know, every version of new flaw, every version of what is wrong with us. I recently started getting these great new ads in Italy on TikTok targeted to the female area, and it's highlighting all the things that could be wrong with this. And I'm like, that is an ad on a platform directed at children mostly. Isn't that horrific? This is part of being a woman, right? So people ask me, okay, how are you so confident? How do you love yourself every single day? And I'm like, well, I don't. I don't love myself every single day, but I feel stronger in myself than I did 10 years ago, 20 years ago. And I allow space for maybe one day I will look at myself and I will be, every single thing about you is what I want. Not now, not yet, but maybe one day. And in that in between, I think there's such potential for allowing ourselves gentleness. We so often shame ourselves for what we're feeling, for what we're dealing with. It's one of the reasons why disordered eating is so difficult and so deadly, because it's tied to shame, embarrassment. I shouldn't be feeling this way. I shouldn't be doing this. I'm going to hide it. No one can know. That's why miscarriage. Again, so shameful, right? I'm embarrassed of myself. I need to hide this away. No one can know. But shame grows in the darkness. And when we kind of open it up to the light, I think of it like an infection. When you put an infection in the sun, it helps to heal it. So with that not yet, we're allowing space for the shame to be seen in the sun, for the shame to go away, for us to treat ourselves gently, for whatever we're feeling, wherever we are with our body, with our goals, with our mental health. And we also allow for a bit of hope, right? You are climbing that mountain. You are working towards whatever goal feels right for you, whether that's eating a Reese's, whether that's running a marathon or an ultra marathon, whether that's wearing a bikini and letting your cellulite show. So today, if I can tell one story, I think it would be this one. Give yourself the kindness, the softness, to respect wherever you are, respect your body on every stage, and give yourself the gentleness of those two words of not yet.